Here's a special Thanksgiving hymn from Comedy Central.
We gather together to watch cheesy movies at Comedy Central on Thanksgiving Day at Mystery Science Theater 3000. It's 30 straight hours and it's called Turkey Day.
Catch Turkey Day all day Thanksgiving here at Comedy Central.
Hey, how come he doesn't have to sing?
He's in the union.
The VGRT Gaming Podcast, episode 555, recorded on November 25th, 2019.
Welcome to the 555th edition of the Hello and welcome to the 555th edition of the TD Gaming Podcast and 388th episode of Video Game Roundtable. I am TJ Denzer.
I am Scott Dirk.
And I am Jonah Faub.
The VGRT Gaming Podcast focuses on game news from around the industry.
No gaming flashback. That was last week. We talked about Burnout Paradise. Or at least me and TJ did. Scott vanished.
Well, I was having hearing problems, but my hearing has cleared up, and it's much better now.
That's good.
So, Scott is no longer deaf. We're coming close to 400 on the Video Game Roundtable, which to me is incredible. Even more incredible for the fact that a podcast I joined in episode 200 of the TD Gaming Podcast is coming towards 600. I keep on talking about the numbers, but to think that I've been sticking with this for 400 episodes... Almost 400 episodes since 2000. I want to say 9. So that's like 10 years of this on the VGRT. But I've been listening to at least the TD Gaming Podcast since its first episode, and that started in 2007.
That's a long time.
Yeah, I wonder how many episodes that both of you have been in. I could always check because I always tag who's been in each episode for the VGRT, and since you were never here for the gaming podcast, you know, doesn't matter. I'd estimate that you were like 150 to 200 episodes, Scott.
Awesome.
Same thing with you, TJ. I'm not sure, though. Anyways, enough navel-gazing. I do want to talk about Half-Life Alyx and how people are saying this is Valve's attempt for people to get into VR. Here's the problem. VR is expensive. It's not going to become mainstream until you can do at least $200 for a headset.
Not only is VR expensive, but the headset that Half-Life Alyx is designed for is like even on the higher end of expensive. There's no doubt about it. The Half-Life Alyx is being designed for Valve's VR headset, which is the Index, and that thing is $1,500, which even for VR headsets is expensive.
Now, it's interesting. CD Projekt Red said they really don't care about VR at this point, and Microsoft has said that nobody – investigation they've done, nobody really wants a VR headset as a must, you know. It isn't there yet for them to be concerned with, although the specs for the Project Scarlet will easily be able to do VR. We're going to get into that later. But it's – and I agree because, you know what, I really don't care about VR until it's, you know – it took me to buy an Elite controller on sale before I bought that thing. And there's no way in heck I'm going to spend $180 for the Elite 2. No way. It's like buying another console.
Yeah, that's it. That's way too expensive. The VR games, most of them are just fun to play for a little while. And if you're just going to play these games like short term, and there's not even that many of them, then it's really not – doesn't seem feasible to – invest your money in this just yet.
Yeah, Well, go ahead, TJ.
I will say a lot of VR games are like that, where they're kind of like short-term experiences as opposed to long-term, like, full-length games.
Yeah, I mean, that's what Phil Spencer said. He said there's too many of them that are just demos and tech stuff, you know, nothing really like a game, which makes me wonder how long Half-Life Alyx is.
Well, they're talking about it as a full-length game, and it's not the only one. They're also Skydance Interactive is also working on a Walking Dead game that's going to be VR, The Walking Dead Saints and Sinners, and that looks substantial as well.
But, you know, here's the thing. It's like when people were trying to push 3D TVs, you know. No one's going to pay that much for a TV, and no one's going to pay that much to do something in VR. They're going to have to wait a bit. They have to wait until that technology goes down to at least $200 or cheaper, because I don't care what you want to say, it's money that's going to drive people's purchases. I don't care how cool the tech is.
It's a shame. Yeah. It's a shame, too, because I like my worst fear about this, and like my most pessimistic fear about this, is that Valve will be like, oh, nobody bought Half-Life Alyx. I guess nobody wants Half-Life 3. Okay.
Oh, well, that's the other thing. People are saying, well, you know, if people buy Half-Life Alyx, they're going to make Half-Life. No, they're not. No, they're not. They're not going to make Half-Life 3.
See, I was on the flip side of that. Is that I was looking at it as, if we don't buy enough of Half-Life Alyx, they're going to be like, consumer interest is dead. No Half-Life 3 ever.
Yeah, that's so untrue. It's not funny. The thing is that, you know, Gator, released the plot of Half-Life 3 anyway. So we already know what happened in Half-Life 3.
I actually haven't seen that.
Really? What he did was he gave away the entire plot of Half-Life 3, but what he did was he gender-swapped everybody. So Alyx became Alyx, and it's like Mrs. Freeman, Mrs. Froman or whatever, you know, something like that, Mrs. Fremont, you know. So it's like it doesn't take too much to figure out who they're talking about. So, yeah, I mean, if you want, just go back to, do a Google search for Half-Life 3 plot revealed.
That's not the same as a game, though. I'm not even going to, like, bother.
So, anyways, yeah, I mean, I've gotten to the point in which I really don't care about Half-Life 3.
Yeah, but there are a lot of people that do. There are a lot of people that do.
They say they do, but no one really gives a shit anymore.
I don't know about that.
That ship has sailed.
I mean, I think
them forever. You think you want it, but when you get it, it's not what you wanted.
I don't know. I mean, look at the reaction for Half-Life Alyx
anymore. I mean, yeah, they're making this game just to sell VR. That's all they're doing. Because if they really wanted to make a game, then they would have made Left 4 Dead 3 a long time ago.
Yeah, no doubt. I mean, I'm not going to disagree that they're definitely putting the effort more into VR, but I mean, they've been talking about this like full length VR game since what, April this year?
They've shown their track record at releasing hardware. It's not going to happen. Anyway, what have you been playing, TJ?
This last week, I jumped back into Civ 6. It came out on consoles, yep. PS4 and Xbox One, and so I was on deck to review it, and I gave it a go. And interesting, it played well, but I definitely felt the limitations of having to play a game as extensively controlled as Civ 6 on a gamepad.
You know, I played Stellaris on PC, and I was still confused. I think I was having a better time on console. But I will say, one of the games that I have on, you know, another game that I have the Xbox version, but I played City Skylines on PC, and I'm having a much better time with that on PC. Simply because it's SimCity, and I know how to do SimCity.
Mm-hmm. I mean, I know how to do Civ, but, like, it was weird to learn the format by which it wanted you to control things.
Did you ever play Civilization Revolution?
No.
Well, then there you go. I have.
So. What is that on? Wasn't that on mobile?
That was on Xbox 360. They had a PlayStation. They had a Nintendo version too, Nintendo handheld version.
It was on PlayStation as well.
The DS.
I think it just I easily noticed how like very quickly how obnoxious it can be sometimes that you can't just poke something like point at something and poke it. Like you can do that on mobile and you can do that on PC with mouse and keyboard, but like you actually have to move a cursor around on gamepad and then like there's just all the little shortcuts that they had to program
have,
in.
And I don't. The city thing.
You did like you look, that's what I was about to say. That's what I was about to say is that there's all sorts of little shortcuts, but not all of them are intuitive, in my opinion. For instance, the thing that bothered me the most was like if you wanted to fire a catapult, you had to select the catapult with the joystick or by moving the joystick over it and then hitting X. Then you had to use the directional pad to move over to fire ranged attack. Then you had to move the joystick over to the target you wanted, and then you had to confirm it. And it's like that's a few too many steps to just fire a catapult to me.
Yeah, the keyboard shortcuts are a time saver.
But it's more along. But it's not just that. It's the fact that if you pressed anything besides what I just said, it would like deselect the catapult, and you'd have to start the process again. And it just sort of like frustrate. It was like frustrating in the way of like I just want to blow up that knight
with a mouse. I mean,
and then I can't tell you how many times I was like trying to get things to go properly, like, but and then I accidentally hit the end turn button, which is just straight up square. If you hit square at any point, it ends your turn. It doesn't like check in with you to make sure are you sure you want to do that. It just straight up ends your turn.
But isn't this game? But here's the thing: Civ 6 does use keyboard and mouse on console if you want to.
I don't know if PS4. Well, maybe PS4 does have the plugins. I didn't bother to check.
I'm pretty sure it does.
I don't think most people do.
Oh, come on. You could just pluck the keyboard and mouse off your PC and just drag it over. It's not a big deal.
Oh.
No, I can't because I have a laptop. I would have to break my laptop.
Yeah, a lot of people have laptops only.
Yeah, I'd have to break my laptop in half to do that.
People, in fact, default think when they think computer, they think laptop. And if you clarify desktop, it's like, whoa, there's desktop still?
But point being, like, I could have done that, but the point was to see how it played on a gamepad for PS4.
And not well, apparently.
It didn't play bad. It was just that there was like the obvious. Some of the things that they did were good. Like they put command like social structure, like interacting with other nations, and like checking in with city states on the R1 button. And they put like checking your tech tree, checking your civic tree, and checking like your governments and stuff on the L1 button. And that was a good workaround. That was super intuitive. I liked that. But then there was things like I described with the catapult. They were like, man, this sucks. just let me fire the catapult. I just want to fire the catapult. So, pretty good. Not, I would still prefer to play it with a keyboard and mouse as opposed to any gamepad.
Well, I'm checking right now because they do have a list of games for the Xbox that you can use a keyboard and mouse with. And I don't know what year this thing is from, but it doesn't. It's not showing Civ 6. Yeah, October 30th.
Civ 6 literally launched on consoles maybe a week ago.
I know, but I'm just saying. You know, it seems unlikely that. You know, it seems likely that at some point they're going to add the keyboard and mouse support. I mean, if you have it on Sims 4, and if you have it on Warframe, if you have it on Warhammer Vermintide 2 and Surviving Mars and Sea of Thieves and Sniper Elite V2 Remastered, then, you know, you should have it on you should have it at some point. People just have to ask for it, I guess. You could use keyboard and mouse on Xbox One with Minecraft.
Yeah, I found that a little bit cumbersome, too, because you have to move the look view with one joystick, and it just moves a lot slower than it would on mouse and keyboard. But if you can use mouse and keyboard to play Minecraft on Xbox, then that would be fine.
You can. It's just that not a lot of games on console have support for it. Although, if there's going to be a game that's going to use support for a keyboard and mouse, it would be a turn-based strategy game.
Yeah, absolutely.
No one's, you know, you don't have to. With some of the shooters that have crossplay, you know, it's like they won't allow people to, with a keyboard to play against people with gamepad, you know, that sort of thing. But with a turn-based game, no one cares. You can use a keypad. You can use a gamepad. You can use a keyboard and mouse. Everybody moves at the same time.
Yeah. And I mean, like, yeah, I can completely understand why you wouldn't want people like playing Call of Duty Modern Warfare to use gamepad against mouse, because it's a sheer difference in reaction times.
Let me guess. Neither of you have played Star Wars Jedi Fallen Order, right?
I haven't been able to. I bought it, and I have not been able to get it to load. It won't get past the loading screen.
PS4?
On the PC.
Oh man.
Yeah, the PC version has been having loads of bug issues. So I would play. Yep. If I were you, I would play it on a low resolution too, because the 4K isn't working right, from what I understand.
There isn't any low. The lowest is medium.
Oh, that's right. Also, you have to have a fuck ton of hard drive space for that thing. Like 60 gigabytes, I believe?
50, 52, 55, something like that. But its lowest graphic setting is medium, then it goes to high, and then epic. Those are the only three settings. But I tried that, and I mean, I have a good graphics card, so that's not a problem. I think it's the processor, but I mean, the game starts, but then when I hit new game, it just freezes at the loading screen, and so many people have been having issues with that.
What have you been playing, Scott?
I have been playing Grandia 2 on Steam, which was, I think, a PlayStation 2 game. I'm not sure, but it's the sequel. It's not a direct sequel to Grandia 1, but it is, I think, still in the same world somewhere.
Well, Grandia was originally on the Dreamcast.
Yeah.
And then
so
it was on the PS2.
Okay. But Grandia 2, you are what's called a geohound, and I guess you're kind of a mercenary. You just do jobs that people pay you to do. And so you're escorting this cleric to a temple, and she ends up possessed by this demon. And then she wants you to go around and find these other demon parts that have broken out and are affecting the world, and you have to defeat them all the while.
It's typical War of Light versus War of Darkness versus Light versus Darkness.
Yeah, it does seem that way. Yeah, though,
one is the God of Light and the other one's the God of Darkness.
Yeah, basically, this demon comes out of her and takes possession of her, and she'll take control, and she gets more powerful as she's destroying these God's little body part things, and. I haven't gotten too far, but it's interesting game mechanic. You have a turn-based field to play, and all the characters that you set the command what to do, and then they go and do it, and the characters move around on the field, and sometimes they miss their action because they end up walking the wrong way for some reason. If you tell them to attack and they kind of get in the way of each other, then they just end up walking in the wrong direction, and then they miss out on their turn, which can be a pain, but I'm enjoying the game so far.
Now, I'm assuming you're playing the HD remaster.
Yes.
Because here's the thing. It's not the first. This is actually the third version that's on Windows. It first came out in 2002 on Windows, then they had the anniversary edition like 4 years ago, which is odd because that's a 13-year anniversary edition. It makes no sense. Unless they're talking about the original Dreamcast, which came out in Japan in 2000, then it's the 15th. I don't know what it is. Who cares about the 15th anniversary of something? That's why Sonic 2006 was so bad, because they needed to get it out for the 15th anniversary. So yeah, the HD remaster update was released like a month ago.
Yeah, I don't know how well. The sprites look very nice. But their cutscenes still have blurriness, pixelation on their animations, and the sound balance is bad because like the sound effects are really loud.
Here's the thing:
music is
what you're
really
playing
low.
Is actually Grandia 2 Anniversary Edition, which was released 4 years ago, and all they did was upgrade the textures with widescreen support and visual enhancements to his videos, you know, that sort of thing. But nothing else was changed. And by the way, if you own the anniversary edition from 4 years ago, it was a free update.
Yeah, it was automatically updated to the remastered HD. So, you know, that's what I'm playing now.
Did you finish it before?
No, I didn't. I was waiting for the remaster to see what the differences would be. And, you know, I think...
the widescreen.
Yeah. I think the sprites look better, but other than that, that's it.
Well, they also, for the first time, allowed you to customize your resolution, which is kind of like, okay. That's like, oh, this light comes with an on-off switch.
Right. But, you know, I do like it. There's a little bit of environmental interactions. You can jump down cliffs and cut and break certain things. But again, only certain things. But I am interested in the story to see how this turns out. Cause like I said, she's possessed by this demon and, you know, just gonna see what happens.
Grandia 2 isn't exactly the deepest game. It's it's bright and colorful and cartoony. Just fine. I'm tired of grim and gritty JRPGs.
Yeah. I am tired of the grim and dark too.
Yeah. I mean, this one is bright and colorful and everything that people think anime is.
Yeah.
Have you been playing anything else?
Minecraft, of course. Can't think of anything else at the moment, so I think. Oh well, yeah, Luigi's Mansion. I got a lot farther on that one. Got a lot of the gems. I've been collecting those. I've been collecting the Boo Ghosts as well. I like playing around with the Gooigi. He's fun. He sounds like He sounds like a really weird Yoshi. He makes like a warbling noise, and it just kind of reminds
Luigi
me of
Luigi always
Yoshi.
Makes the weirdest noises too.
Yeah.
So to make him different from Mario, they really give him a weird voice.
Yeah, you can make him say Mario, and if he's like particularly scared, he'll say it in a shaky voice. But if he feels safe, he'll say it confidently and calmly.
Mario. So,
yeah, and then he'll be like, Mario. He'll be like a scared.
I do love that. That's his identifying character quality. Mario is just Mario. Mario is the hero. Mario is everything. Luigi is his main quality is scared.
Luigi is basically Scooby-Doo and Shaggy.
Oh, I still think I give him props because he's still moving forward even if he's scared out of his mind. He's still doing he's still hunting these ghosts. He's still collecting them and he's freeing them, freeing his friends, and you gotta give someone credit who's. Obviously scared and shaken, but he still fights, anyways, because he has to fight to save his brother.
Yeah, but it's not his mansion. It's someone else's hotel this time. It's a dismissive title. People are so stupid, they keep on falling for the same tricks. Oh, look! Let's all go to this place that I was invited to. Nothing will ever bad happen to us here. Oh, look, all the mushrooms and Peach and Mario are all captured. That never happens.
Yeah, it's Mario. I don't think it's supposed to be a deep game either, but, just have fun with it. It's kind of Metroidvania-like, where you get powers and abilities as you go along.
The thing I don't like about the game is that there are certain powers that you get that you only use once, and they're useless otherwise. You just use them once. It's sort of like, why don't you just use a key?
I've used multiple abilities multiple times.
There are some abilities that you only use once on one door.
I haven't found that ability at all. I've used the flashlight several times. I've used the X-ray several times. I've used the push and pull several times.
That's not what I'm talking about. But you'll see.
Okay.
I mean, that doesn't really matter all that much. There's all sorts of games where you use a super-powered thing one time, and that's about it.
Yeah, that's called bad game design, TJ.
I don't know about that. I mean, original Castlevania, you don't get the cross until like the last level, and you use it one time. You use it to kill the Grim Reaper, and you use it to kill Dracula, and that's about it.
But that's like at the end of the game, and it's I mean games something you get in the middle of the game, and you know it's only used to open up a door, and that's about it. You know but it's not like a key; it's just a power. But the power is just useful once. Anyways, we're getting too far. Let's talk about what I've been playing, and then we'll get to news. I've been playing State of Decay 2. Now that I have it, and it looks like it's been patched because it doesn't keep on glitching out when I'm doing a plague heart. And I will say this: the tutorial is useful just for teaching you the rules. But I found since I started playing without the tutorial, you know, once you get to set up your own thing, yeah, the situation in the tutorial sucks. Don't play the tutorial after you learn the rules. Just stay far away from it because I'd rather start from scratch because immediately I get everybody's happy. Things don't go to shit right away like they do in the tutorial because the tutorial is there to teach you certain, gameplay mechanics like how to cure someone of blood plague, that sort of thing. Here it's just like there's three of you, you get a house, and then you just work from there and you don't have to deal with any emergencies until you're able to deal with them, you know. And it's really deep, although I can see why having playing it co-op would be good because there's so many things that are time dependent and you have so little time to do it that it becomes, well, do I do this and risk this or do I just say screw it because I want to do what I want to do, you know. And I find me doing what I want to do is fine because yeah, I won't have that resource anymore, but who cares? I learned to not care about everything. Now, I remember 2 weeks ago we were talking three weeks ago? Remember when I took the what kind of gamer are you test, right? And Scott said, well, you're not that much of a completionist, but you keep on getting achievements. And here's my answer is no. You know what I really like doing? I like making my own story. And that runs through every game that I really like. Like Civilization VI I love because guess what? I'm making my own story of the world. And something like State of Decay, I'm living this story, and it's like having a lighter and softer version of The Walking Dead, you know? And if one of my characters gets killed, you know, it's always a major thing, but at least it's sort of like I file it away and like, oh yeah, that really sucked. That was one episode of the story that just went badly.
I'm puzzling over in my head like how you can't get into a game like The Outer Worlds.
The Outer Worlds because the gameplay mechanics and the story suck.
Yeah, but you can make your own story in that game.
Yeah, but the story I'm making sucks. I don't like the story.
But
I don't like the story. The
story
sucks. The characters. I don't give a shit about the characters.
I don't know.
Here's the thing. I liked the gameplay mechanics of Fallout New Vegas, but the characters themselves I didn't like at all. I mean, I finished the game, too. I finished Fallout New Vegas because I went on God mode and I said, fuck it, I'm just going to just bore right through it.
See, I don't know. I've had the complete opposite experience, and I think a good part of it is like
I'm glad you like the story and the characters. I don't.
It's not even that I necessarily like the characters or it's not necessarily that I like the story that much. It's that I like the experience that I'm crafting based off of my own choices. Like what I told you about a couple weeks ago when I was talking about the dangerous part of the planet and how I'm like, you know what, fuck it, scientific expedition. I'm going to see just how dangerous that area is and see how far I can go.
Yeah, here's the thing. But what I'm making with this story is extremely malleable. You know, I mean, my current story, and what really amazes me is that I haven't really heard any repeats on quests or dialogue yet on who you get. I'm wondering if each and every one of the characters, and there's a lot of characters, because you can randomize and keep randomizing. Like, one of my guys right now just gives a shit about a comic book. And this is a post-apocalypse. And he's worried about a number one issue of a comic book that he really likes. and someone's blackmailing him over. That, to me, is hilarious. And, you know, I don't have to do a story right away. You know, it's... And, you know, they have emotions, and they can get pissed off. They can have fighting yet. I still haven't had the... I haven't had the part in which you take someone out back and shoot them through the head because either they're going to turn into a zombie or because they're so disruptive. What's funny is that in a previous gameplay, I did this girl, and she was complaining all the time, but I took her on a mission with with the intent of, you know what, this is going to be a really dangerous mission. If she gets killed, I don't care. And she ended up being the most advanced character of the entire group, having the most abilities, forcing me to use her because she was so skilled at everything. When she ended up as one of two survivors, I just quit and restarted because it's hard to play the game when you only have two survivors. Someone got a phone call. So yeah, I mean, State of Decay is going right down my alley. It's the sort of game in which, and here's the thing I like. I've only met a few humans who want to kill you. And oh, by the way, when fighting against them, I realized, yeah, the zombies may be dangerous, but they're also easy as fuck to kill. Humans will dodge, they'll roll, they'll get out of your way. They're not going to stand there and take it like a zombie. And fighting a human group of four people nearly wiped my entire party out. I had one sole survivor of that thing. And like I said, I filed it into the thing. You know, it's like an episode of The Walking Dead. So yeah, I mean, there's another game that's coming out which I'm really looking forward to. We're going to be talking about it later in the podcast. So yeah, State of Decay 2, I'm playing it on Xbox One and patched up, or at least because there's still some funny bugs, but they're more like Red Dead Redemption bugs.
What is that noise?
Why don't you just mute it?
That's not coming from my end.
Okay, sorry about that. It's okay.
Anyways, we're going to go to the first news item. Go ahead, TJ.
Ubisoft wants Rainbow Six Siege to have more of a story next year. From PC Gamer. Ubisoft wants plot and character to be a bigger part of its multiplayer FPS in 2020. Over the course of the game's standard quarterly updates, Rainbow Six Siege presentation director Alexander Karpazis told IGN in a recent interview, "Ubi aspires to tell a continuous story. What I can say for year 5 in the story is the story elements are going to be huge for us," he said. "The story will kick off in year 5 season 1 and involve Nighthaven, the fictional private military corporation founded by Operation Shifting Tide's new attacker, Kali." Karpazis said that the story will be told in the battle pass and through new operators themselves, but also mentioned that the story is wrapped up in everything. Siege's first big story moment came with the co-op outbreak event in 2018. For the first time, operators talked to each other and built personality. Although the event was only a few short missions, a little went a long way to sell a larger Siegeverse. Outbreak is now being spun out into its own game made by a separate team, Rainbow Six Quarantine. With year five, Ubi could unite the two games under one continuity.
What's Rainbow Six Quarantine?
Rainbow Six Quarantine is going to be a sort of Left 4 Dead style take on Rainbow Six. It's looking a lot like it's going to use the same Rainbow Six elements, like the same gameplay, the same shooting and all that jazz, but with a sort of – there's this outbreak. There's these terrorists trying to propagate this outbreak, and it's killing people or turning them into something. So it's interesting to see
people want, really? I mean –
Yes and no. Like you know what? There are people that really, really, really wanted that Rainbow Six, like the single player game that they were coming out with a while back. I forgot what the name of it was, but it was like they canceled it after a certain while. And I feel like that has sort of left a gap in the Rainbow Six canon. But I also think that Rainbow Six Siege is such a big thing in its own right that that it might be a little obnoxious to try to muddle those waters by trying to mix the two things together. Just like, I don't know. In my opinion, you should probably just let Rainbow Six Siege continue to be its own thing and like make things like Rainbow Six Quarantine.
Wasn't there in Halo an ops mode in which they had weekly Spartan Ops, I think it was called?
Wasn't that some – I feel like ODST had something like that.
Or I think it might have been Halo Reach maybe.
Maybe.
It had operator, or could have been ODST. I don't know. No. It was Halo 4. Yeah. It was in Halo 4, and they had, like, five missions each. And it was like 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10. They had 10. So there were, like, 50 missions that were story-based. And I'm wondering if it could be something like that in Rainbow Six Siege, in which you'd have groups of story-based missions. But then it's sort of like Titanfall, in which the first Titanfall, in which there was a story for each side, but no one really cared, because no one was paying attention.
Mm-hmm. Rainbow Six has been kind of this stealth SWAT game, right, where you're trying to sneak up on people to take them down and defuse situations.
Yeah, I mean, traditionally with Rainbow Six games like Rainbow Six Vegas and stuff like that. But Rainbow Six Siege is more of a slow-paced tactical shooter.
Right, and I was wondering how well that works with the zombie outbreak version of itself, because they typically zombie.
They just said an infect outbreak. It could be diseased people.
Okay, like with rabies, like in that one movie. They have rabies.
Yeah, they didn't really, like, it was only a teaser that they showed at E3. They didn't really get deep into exactly what happens to people when they get this whatever the thing is. So it's hard to, like, I'm not really sure what it is. I don't think anyone is yet.
Maybe it's not zombies. Maybe it's like you just die very quickly, and so the stakes are higher for failure, I guess.
Yeah. And then, like, but they did try to do another, like, sort of thing like Rainbow Six Vegas. It was Rainbow Six Patriots was the canceled game. And they were they were spinning it as, like, this sort of, like, Jack Ryan 24 type thing where, like, you have to make decisions against terrorists and there's never an easy choice. Will you kill the terrorist and possibly set off a bomb that triggers a disease outbreak, or will you let them go and live to fight another day or some shit? And it's like that – there is a desire for that.
Okay, so what outbreak was that when your teammates died, the dead operators would respawn. It's sort of like infected hordes, so zombies, but not zombies. Just mass infection. They had to find out who the patient zero was, who was causing the outbreak. People mm-hmm. going nuts.
Yeah. So I mean, like the desire for that type of game, like a PvE experience in Rainbow Six, does exist. I just don't think that you should. I just don't think that you should mix it with Siege too much, just because, like, let Siege be its thing. Let Siege continue to flourish the way that Siege has always flourished.
Well, you don't want to see people with red eyes and red glowing hands attacking you.
No, I just don't want them to pull away from Siege's quality to make something different.
I don't think they would do that. I mean, remember, Siege's first and foremost mission is to be an esport.
Sure.
I don't think they're going to stray too far from what people really want from it. And like I said, maybe it's like Spartan Ops, in which it's sort of like, if you want, you can play this as like bonus content.
Yeah, and I also look at things – like my fear is that I look at things like Tom Clancy's Ghost Recon Breakpoint, Tom Clancy's The Division, Tom Clancy's whatever the fuck else. And
the thing that it could be is not, that, like, you could have matches, but they're set in places that are in Rainbow Six Quarantine. So while you're fighting, you have the area and the operators are commenting on it. But the story of Quarantine isn't really – it's just like set in that universe. But you're still doing the same, you know, four versus four.
Sure. I was just saying that Tom – like Ubisoft hasn't been having very much success with those other things.
Yeah, Breakpoint. Ubisoft's been doing the open world thing. Rainbow Six Siege is the one thing that's not open world. And neither is Quarantine. So
yeah.
I don't think they're going to fall for that. It's not a
quarter. I would hope not.
I don't know. No one wants to see Rainbow Six Siege. Daybreak? No. What was the last Ghost Recon?
Breakpoint.
Wildlands. Yeah. No one wants to see Rainbow Six Siege Wildlands.
Breakpoint.
Whatever. Anyways, let's move on to the next item because you know, Project Scarlet may cost $4.99 Project Scarlet may cost $499 with four times Xbox One X performance. This comes from Tweaktown. Project Scarlet is shaping up to be a beast of a console. Microsoft says Scarlet will deliver four times the performance of the Xbox One X's six teraflops of computing power and even 40 times more performance than current Xbox systems, all thanks to its boosted internal Zen 2 CPU and Navi GPU specs. It may even deliver 4K 120 frames per second gaming, complete with adaptive sync support. Typically, this kind of tech leap is accompanied by a steep price tag, but new reports say Scarlet could cost as cheap as $500 when it ships into 2020, which is the same rumored price of the PlayStation 5. This info comes from Twitter user PS Erebus, whose track record includes accurately predicting The Last of Us Part 2's original February 2020 release date, which was delayed. Nothing has been confirmed by either Microsoft or Sony, so this is speculation at best. On paper, there isn't much separating Project Scarlet from Sony's next-gen PS5. Both systems use a customized AMD SoC with an 8-core, 16-thread Zen 2 CPU and a higher-end Navi GPU tech, GDDR6 memory, solid-state drive storage, and native backward compatibility with current next-gen games. The big differentiation between the systems isn't hardware, but how said hardware is going to be used. The systems apparently use ray tracing differently, as Project Scarlet has dedicated ray tracing cores. Microsoft also says Project Scarlet can use the onboard solid-state drive as a VRAM buffer, effectively giving developers more power and flexibility for their games. Right now, I'm just going to underline native backward compatibility with current-gen games because I am not buying another system just to have all my other games go on the shelf because they're not compatible with it, or they have to have software compatibility.
Yeah, that's been my issue with PlayStation as well. They keep moving forward, and they're going to make the games that your current library be not compatible with the new console. It just seems to defeat the purpose of this is your entertainment center for the living room.
So let's start right now at the top. Do you think $500 is good, or do you wish it was like $400?
$400 or $300 would be nice, but $500, I might as well just go get a computer then.
I bought the Xbox One and the Xbox One X for $500. So, here's the thing. I might not be a day one purchaser of. What am I saying? Of course I am. Why do I lie to myself like that, DJ? Why do I lie? You know what they're gonna do is they're gonna have one that's stamped. This is gonna be a special Project Scarlet edition, just like they did with the Project Scorpio edition. I said yes. I don't want to be left out. I want that special achievement that gives me no points to my gamer score. I want that E-peen.
Right.
I mean, I'm probably going to be a day one purchaser for PS5 just because, like, I need it for work. But I don't know. Like, it's really getting like even the way they put it, like. It doesn't seem like there's going to be too much of a difference between the two. Preference, I guess.
It sounds like the Xbox One X is going to be Project Scarlet, is going to just go berserk, you know. Because here's the problem with Sony. When they make a console, They're very brute force about it. Like when they released the PS3, you know, they slapped on so much shit that it made it $600. Same thing with the PS Vita. They slapped so much shit on it without concern for how it's going to work together. You know, and the only reason why they took the leap with the PS4 is that they sold it for $399 instead of $500 like Microsoft did, and also Microsoft pissing people off with the specter of always online gaming.
You know, I was looking like this is someone that this has to do with Stadia, but
I didn't want to talk about Stadia. We don't have to talk about Stadia right now.
The only thing I was going to bring up in regards to it yet was Phil Harrison. He was there at the launch of the PS3. He was there at the launch of the Xbox One. He's been there at the launch of the Stadia. That is a bad track record.
Yeah. I don't know. Right now, Google is having to deal with the quality of Stadia's games.
Yeah. They chose the wrong direction to go with that conversation.
Oh, wait. You know what? Someone posted, I think I retweeted him too, Wombat posted, and I have to get the quote up because it's hilarious and so true, but and it was something that was on, you know, that I didn't articulate, you know, that I wouldn't have thought of it, but it was probably the reason why I wasn't excited about Stadia. He said, if you bought an untested video game console from a digital ad agency, you got what you deserve.
Yeah, there is the risk for the early adopter, but man, I got bit on this one.
Yeah, but here's the thing. You know what Stadia didn't have, which it needed, and that is games. The game list that they had for Stadia is like, who gives a shit? Oh my god, I can play NBA 2K19? Sign me up for that.
Yeah, I mean, like...
Borderlands 3, woo!
Red Dead Redemption 2, which... I mean, like, part of the issue with the whole thing is that they Phil Harrison promised that all launch games would be 4K, 60 FPS.
And they're not.
They are absolutely not. And then the issue with all of that... is that Google came out with a statement today saying, this is actually on the developers to fix, which is sort of true. But also Google is apparently not looking at the games that come across their table and come out on their system. Like, where's the quality control? Where's the overhead actually making sure that the things that come out on your launch system are of quality and not pissing everybody off?
And the thing is, there's 42 games listed for it, just 42, and some of them haven't come out yet. Like Cyberpunk 2077 isn't out. You know, Baldur's Gate 3 isn't out. Marvel's Avengers isn't out. Orcs Must Die 3 isn't out. And, oh, by the way, I didn't even know that was coming. And I'm really looking forward to that. I'm just hoping they don't go the full MOBA route. did we really need Stadia to play Elder Scrolls Online? Or super hot?
No. No, we sure didn't.
I mean, what? Here's the thing. You know what Google needs is first-party software. You know, something you can play on Stadia that you can't play anywhere else. Here's the thing. You know, streaming gaming is basically for people who really can't afford consoles. And that's usually, you know, places like South America, you know, which they had the Zeebo, which was a streaming console. Stuff like that, you know, or you're in Europe where they have a stable connection.
Yeah, I mean, like, we have data caps in the United States, and that alone makes Stadia just like – it cripples it. It cripples it at a certain point for pretty much everyone.
I mean, we're talking about xCloud, and at least Microsoft has a library.
Yeah, the xCloud, like, the best thing that Project xCloud did was announce their games immediately after Stadia finalized their list, which was like the XL19 conference couldn't have come at a better time. as far as that worked out for timing.
And you can do it right now, by the way. They're allowing you to demo stuff. I mean, you know, you at least you can play something like Gears 5 on the xCloud. That's something that people actually want.
Tekken 7's on there with all the DLC.
Really? Well, you're the fighting guy. You're the fighting guy. I'm not.
Tekken 7 is easily like the top tier fighting game right now. It's so good. Yes, absolutely. It's the animation is excellent. The visuals are excellent. The character roster is dynamite.
Here's the thing, though, and I don't play it, and I definitely haven't played it. I'd be interested to see, because here's the thing about fighting fans: you gotta have really good controller. No controller lag. You know, and that's an online lag for Tekken 7. So the question is that what kind of, you know, is the online play for Tekken 7 over xCloud silky smooth? I mean, only a fighting game fan could tell me that.
Yeah, that's one of the things that impressed me about it being on that list is that you would need Tekken 7 to have, like, no latency whatsoever in order to play it online. It is so pinpoint perfect how much it's like you need it to be pinpoint perfect because you're relying on such tight timing for some of these combos. And if it's even off by like, so average online latency is maybe 7 frames. Once you start to get into 10 to 12 frames of delay, it starts to feel noticeable to the point of being like throwing off everything. And, like, you're talking about the difference between maybe, like, a half a second before your move appears on the screen and a full second, which just, like, it doesn't sound like much, but it feels astronomical.
Oh, that reminds me. I read an article, like, a week ago talking about how bad Nintendo's online is. And the people who are suffering the most from it are the are the Super Smash Brothers, gamers, and they really rely on a lot of timed stuff. And it's they're saying that because it's the only game in town, the only way to play online, you know, they're having to alter their way of playing, having to expect massive lag, you know, for that game. And it's like, you know, they need smoother connection.
Yeah, it's absolutely shoddy. It's absolutely shoddy. Like, the level of competition, the difference between competing against someone that's sitting right next to you in Smash and competing against someone online is the difference between, like, having smooth peanut butter on your sandwich and and just going to the trash and pulling out, like, whatever you find in there and putting it on your sandwich.
And the difference is, here's the people in Japan are not having that lag because they're in the same friggin' city. You know, the internet connection is fast because it doesn't have to go over that long a line. United States, though, is 25,000 miles from coast to coast, and you're going to have – unless you have a really good bandwidth, you're going to get really shitty online. As fast as anybody who plays an MMO.
And they do online qualifiers for, like, Nintendo Smash Bros. Esports events, which is, like – God, that sounds just like the worst. I can't imagine actually trying that out and losing to someone specifically in a competition that I really, really wanted to, like, move on to something where I could, like, have a chance at actual money and fun, and then lose to something just because, like, the game decided it was going to slow down on me because somebody had a bad connection.
Yeah. Do you play online, Scott? With Switch?
No.
No? Okay. Because, you know, if you don't play online, then they don't really care.
Yeah, I haven't been able to do that, actually. I think most people that I have on there are on the game when I'm not, and vice versa, so I haven't been able to coordinate that.
Do you ever play Splatoon online?
No.
Okay. Anyways, getting back to the upcoming consoles, you know, it's this console generation is coming to an end, and we're getting the new thing. And everybody still doesn't know what to expect from a Nintendo if they're going to do anything. I mean, they have the Switch Lite out there, don't they?
Yeah, and I feel like they might put out a beefier Switch, but I don't think that they're going to do. I don't think they're going to do a new generation.
The question is that's on everybody's mind is there, if they're going to do an actual new handheld console. And oh, by the way, people are doing their obits for the Nintendo DS, 3DS generation of Nintendo handhelds.
Oh, it's a shame.
I don't really see any harm in that. Like, the Switch does everything that I could care for the 3DS to do at this point, so.
Well, I'm just waiting for the 3DSs to start selling for $50 so I can get one and start playing the games that I missed, like, 5 years ago.
Make sure you download that virtual console as fast as possible before they take it away.
That's true. it's going to suck for me trying to get Street Pass. Anyways, we're going to move on to the next item. Go ahead, TJ.
Phoenix Point has three human factions who have very different views on aliens. From PC Games N. The Phoenix Point release date is almost upon us, and there's a new trailer out now that provides a look at the political backdrop we'll be working within once it arrives.
Did you watch the video? I gave it in the link.
I have not seen it yet.
Oh, okay.
As twisted abominations emerge from the sea, three human factions have formed, each with their own ideas on how to best handle the threat. The clip also gives us a look at the history of the Phoenix Project, a secretive pan-governmental organization formed after World War II with a mind to transcend ideas of individual nations and states. Things take a Lovecraftian turn with the arrival of the Pandora virus. Large banks of mist formed over the oceans and people began to disappear, only to return in twisted, altered forms.
You know, I'm wondering if that's what Rainbow Six Quarantine is.
That'd be neat. This accompanied massive rapid ecological changes, and in response to impending disaster, three factions formed. There's New Jericho, who look like your standard Space Marine-type authoritarians, led by a fellow named Tobias West. New Jericho's stated goal is the eradication of everything infected by the Pandora virus. Synedrion, according to the Phoenix Point's official site, is an anarchist communalist syndicalist faction focused on rebuilding the world with a vision of humanity free of hierarchies. Then there are the Disciples of Anu, described as a new syncretic religion dedicated to adaptation and biological change. The factions are too at odds with each other ideologically to cooperate against a new wave of incursion from the Pandora virus, and it's in this crucial moment that the Phoenix Project has been resurrected. Phoenix Point comes out on the Epic Games Store and Xbox Game Pass for PC December 3rd.
You know, I'm so happy it's on Xbox Game Pass for PC because I have the subscription. And they just did a deal in which you get 3 months for $1, even if you already have it. So I snapped that up really quick. By the way, you notice these three factions, Fighter Mage Rogue, the New Jericho's Fighter, the Syndrion are the Rogues, and the Disciples of Anu are the Mages.
We are on very different wavelengths. The moment I heard three factions, I was thinking to myself, which of these factions is going to let me fuck the aliens? And I've decided that I'm going to be Disciples of Anu.
Yeah. Well, that's the other thing. It's like – it's also like – oh, damn it.
Beyond Earth?
No.
It is like that,
though. MMOFPS, Planetside. It's like Planetside. Like the Disciples of Anu are the ones who are like the ones who are purple and use alien technology in Planetside, while the New Jericho is sort of like the gun one, and the Syndrion are the ones that focus on vehicles. So
it is very much like Beyond Earth, though, too, where you have one that's full technology and the other one is like biologically adaptive.
And then there was one purify everything.
Mm-hmm.
I actually have Alpha Centauri on GOG. This makes me want to play that again, too. But yeah, I mean, for those who don't know, Phoenix Point is basically XCOM. A new version of XCOM. Obviously not by Firaxis, but... So I'm really looking forward to this. I'm hoping it scratches my XCOM itch because, you know, XCOM 2 is great, but it's starting to get a little long in the tooth for me.
You know, I think eventually as DLC, I would like to have another faction that lets you play as like the Pandora virus. Like that's one thing that XCOM didn't do is that they had all these
aliens. Come on.
Yeah, sure. Why not? Like you always have it where you play as the humans, you form the resistance and whatnot, and you fight back. But like, what if you want to play as the aliens and just crush everybody in your way? Or like where we well, have this Pandora these virus?
Like the three factions from the XCOM 2 expansion. I mean, you have New Jericho, who are basically the defectors who defected from the thing. The one played by Michael Dorn. And then you have the faction who is like the Syndrion who are headed by Marina Sirtis, and you have the Disciples of Rue who are like the ones who are headed by Q.
See, and I think
you have Worf, Deanna, and Q in XCOM 2, and that's basically what you have here.
See, and I think what I would like to see is sort of like a campaign where like. You play as the Pandora virus. You're essentially the Zerg, so like you're animalistic, but by way of just sheer coincidence, the Disciples of Anu sort of align with what you're trying to do.
Okay, whatever you say.
I mean, that's what I see. Why not?
Hey Scott, if you're a TNG fan, you should get XCOM 2 and its expansions because everybody's from Star Trek Next Generation. You have Q, you have Deanna, you have Riker, and you have Worf.
That's pretty cool. I mean, I could just watch Gargoyles and have the same thing with Jonathan Frakes, Brent Spiner, and Michael Dorn are in that as well.
Yeah, but you don't have Q. See, that's where
true.
It all falls down. You have to have. God.
Yeah, John Delancey is very good.
Yeah, you have to have him. I could listen to John Delancey read the phone book. Everything mm-hmm. that comes out of his mouth is always vaguely sarcastic, no matter how hard he tries.
Yeah.
At some point, I'm going to play Quantum Conundrum, which is basically Portal, but instead of GLaDOS, you have Q. Eat any good ones lately, Worf? Anyways, it's coming out in a couple of weeks, and I just can't wait.
Like I'm definitely going to be on board day one with that. It's worth checking out just to see like how the vision of the original designer of XCOM has evolved his strategies over the years.
Yeah, because the first
he hasn't been involved since what the third one that like was it
well,
was
see,
it
was XCOM,
Terrace,
XCOM
was it Terrace
from
the
deep?
Deep
and there was XCOM Apocalypse, which was the one that was more of a shooter. I think Apocalypse was number 3.
So he stopped at Terrors of the Deep, right? I think that was the one. I'm pretty sure he stopped at Terrors of the Deep. I want to see, and that's been like what? How long ago did Terrors of the Deep come out?
Oh, that was back in 1995. That was way
so
back
it,
when.
So it's been like 24 years since he returned to like this style of game. I really am interested to see how that turns out.
Well, you know, he did the Dreamland Chronicles, I believe.
Yeah, but I'm talking about like the sheer level of like stress.
He did do XCOM Apocalypse.
Ah, okay.
That was number 3. 2006, he did Rebel Star Tactical Command. He was the co-creative director for Assassin's Creed 3 for the Vita. So that's about the latest thing he did. The latest thing he did was Chaos Reborn.
Mm.
That was a remake of his 1985 game Chaos.
This will be interesting, though. It's super interesting to see somebody like that was like the originator of a certain style come back to that style and see what they and see how they've evolved over the time.
Well, here's the good thing, you know. He's making this game when we already know XCOM by Sid Meier exists. So hopefully he'll say, well, that really went well. So I hope that has as much of an influence.
See, and I don't think he's going to do it one to one either, because for him, like the guy seems particular enough that for him to come back to it, it seems to me like,
well, here's
that's cool.
He brought back the old school Geoscape.
Well, that's what I'm saying, is that it for him to come back to this style of game, it really does feel like he's saying, that's cool. You guys can play that if you want. Here's how I would have done it.
Yeah, like looking at screenshots, you know, it's not too different.
For sure, but that, like, when it comes to an XCOM game, what's on the surface is barely scratching it. Like, it's – I really want to see the nuts and bolts of this.
By the way, he has been releasing for the past 2 years little stories, you know, that are posted on the website. You know, sort of like I Love Bees, except not as an ARG, just basically, you know, all these little stories. And the next ones are going to be published, actually. Well, the last ones were published like a few days ago.
That's great.
So if you go to the official site, you have these little stories talking, you know, give you little glimpses into the world. So, yeah. I mean, I'm excited about the old school Geoscape.
Mm-hmm.
For those who don't know, in the first XCOM, you know, you had this globe and you had to, all these things would light up on it. You'd have to pick where you want to go, you know, sort of different from what they did with XCOM. And even though XCOM 2 has sort of a Geoscape, it's more like you're traveling, your base is traveling to each thing. And in Geoscape's case, it's just pinpointing things, and you have to pick out which one you want to take care of, and no, you can't take care of everything. So.
Yeah, like it should be fun.
Yeah. Like I said, since it's coming on XCOM Game Pass for PC, I get to play it, well, quote unquote, for free. I mean, I am playing a subscription, but, you know.
Yeah.
And that's the thing that amazes me. You know, this is a coup. You know, I mean, there are games that are coming out on Game Pass PC day one. Because remember, this is supposedly an Epic Games Store exclusive. You know, but there are games that are coming out on the Game Pass, like The Outer Worlds. I mean, yeah, Microsoft bought Obsidian, but did you think in a million years that something, a major title like The Outer Worlds would be Game Pass on day one?
Yeah, it's wild. It's wild to see, like, and that's a game that's, like, so good. It's not even on sale yet, except for, like, Black Friday sales. But even then, it's, like, maybe $5 off. And it's being considered for Game of the Year.
Wasteland 3 is coming out day one on Game Pass, too.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of stuff. Baldur's Gate 3. I'm really looking forward to Baldur's Gate 3. I want to see what they're going to be doing with that, because it's revolving around liches this time. Not liches. I mean... Mind Flayers, Illithids. And basically what the story is that the Illithids came and took over Baldur's Gate.
Mind Flayers are the worst.
Yeah. Are you looking forward to Baldur's Gate 3 and having to deal with Mind Flayers?
Yes, I am looking forward to Baldur's Gate 3 and seeing what they do with the Illithids. I know in Baldur's Gate 2, they were an enemy, but they weren't as big of a threat. So it'll be interesting to see them be the main threat this time. And, I mean, I guess part of the problem with Baldur's Gate 2 is that you had all these big enemies that are usually the main villain for a campaign. You had, like, five or six dragons. You had several leches, a Demhill lech. You had Beholders, the Ithalids, and Yasu, the Gazanki show up at one point. And it's just so crazy to have all these big things come in, and usually they're like the main threat of any story. So now it looks like they'll have just one of these races be that main threat.
By the way,
it's pretty scary to see.
Did you see the trailer for Baldur's Gate 3?
Yeah, where the guy gets
converted. They show Seramorphosis in live action. For those who don't know, Seramorphosis is when an Illithid buries one of its young into your brain, and
yeah,
literally turns you into an Illithid.
Yes, and it was really disturbing to see, and pretty interesting too, because, you know, I'd never seen that before. So it'll be interesting. Again, it's like, I don't know if it's going to be like hordes of them coming in or just a few.
You saw
or
the trailer, there's like thousands of them in the air.
Yeah. But I mean, a trailer is not the gameplay, you know.
It's also it is the theme, and the theme is that Ilovich took over the entire city.
I do want to clarify, when I said that Mind Flayer is the worst, I don't mean it as they're low quality. I mean
they're fucks to deal with.
Yeah.
Yeah.
They are make you kill your friend while also eating your dreams.
I guess that's what I was trying to say in Baldur's Gate 2. These enemies didn't get the justice they deserve to illustrate how much of a threat they really are. And to have all of these things in that one city in that one time just seems really ludicrous. Like, that just could not happen. So,
yeah.
You're right.
You could have a Mind Flayer eat the brain of a dragon, and it becomes a brain stealer dragon.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's pretty creepy. Pretty freaky, yeah.
Yeah, so when you put all those, like, when you put that list of names up, it's like, when you say Mind Flayer at the end, I'm like, oh, okay, that makes sense. That makes sense that the Mind Flayer is the bigger thing among all those things, because Mind Flayers suck ass. They're the worst.
I mean, yeah. For Mind Flayer, you know, brains are the other white meat.
So that game will be very interesting, and we haven't really seen anything beyond the trailer, and I've seen so many trailers that didn't really reflect gameplay. So
it's going to be a 3D isometric RPG. Just
right, but it's going to have its own flavor. You know, it's not.
I want to know. Here's the thing: they have Baldur's Gate and Baldur's Gate 2 being remastered and updated for all these things. You know what I want to see? Because you can import your characters from Baldur's Gate 1 into Baldur's Gate 2. Imagine if you can import your characters from Baldur's Gate 2 to Baldur's Gate 3.
No, because your character in Baldur's Gate 2 either... Well, I guess it depends on what you did. But your characters usually would ascend.
It doesn't matter what happened to them. Just your last save state, what that character was.
Basically, you just need something in Baldur's Gate 3 that is able to read the data from Baldur's Gate 2 and translate that data into a character.
Baldur's Gate 1, you know? I mean, just have it updated, you know?
That should be doable. I just don't know if they have the, I guess, legal rights to do so or not.
The main character, who cares about Imuin and the other characters?
Well, it's 100 years later anyway, so I don't know if anything would be left in port.
A, elves live over 100 years. They live over 1,000 years. And B, it's fantasy. You can say they were caught in into a stasis, you know, and they were.
Yeah.
I mean, you could also just go this would be sort of a cheap route, but you could also go the route of your character did ascend, and then some shit happened, and they fell out of the sky, and now they don't remember who they are. But they still have their intimate stats.
That has happened in Forgotten Realms.
No, actually, you know, you could just say, oh, it's his grandson, or their identical grandson.
Yeah, it's true. You do have some kids. If you did a romance, you can get a child with one of the elven ladies.
Yeah, so there are ways. There are ways you could go about doing it. I think these games are both being done by Baldur's Gate 3 is being done by the same people doing Wasteland 3, right?
No.
Oh, I thought it was.
So it's Larian Studios. So
they did an entire thing in which they were bragging about how they got to do a D&D game.
I completely was thinking it was In Exile.
They're developing
In Exile is Wasteland.
Entire kit and caboodle.
Okay, well, it's in good hands with Larian then.
Yeah, I think so.
Well, keep in mind
have a passion. They really care.
The Divinity games are basically their way of doing D&D without doing D&D. You know, they have always wanted to do D&D.
Right, because they didn't have the license to do it, but now I guess they do.
Yeah, there was a Baldur's Gate 3 that was discontinued.
Oh, the original?
Baldur's Gate 3 was the Black Hound. But Interplay went out of business and shut down Black Isle.
That was very sad.
You know, I mean, you're getting a Baldur's Gate 3 now, and it has everything to do with...
I'm very happy. I'm looking forward to it.
Yeah, here's the thing. Baldur's Gate 3 was going to... you know what? Here's the thing. None of the characters from the previous Baldur's Gate games are going to be involved in Baldur's Gate 3, the Black Hound, so... It didn't matter.
Yeah, I wasn't surprised. I mean, like I had my character ascend to godhood. You don't have to. You can just leave it vacant. But I think most people probably go ahead and accept that, and other than the other characters, and just I guess go off to do other stuff. So I'm looking forward to a new story, a fresh start, to just a new saga.
Yeah, I'm having to deal with elephants.
Yep.
Those damn mind flayers. They're the original. What is it? It's a brain sucker. What's it doing? It's starving.
Yeah.
Look for our show notes at GamingPodcast.net, along with this reviews and our gaming history articles. If you enjoy feedback, leave us comments on our blog at GamingPodcast.net. Also, hit us up at Facebook.com/GamingPodcast. Subscribe to us on iTunes. Leave some iTunes comments. You can find me at Twitter, at Jonah Falcon.
You can find me at Johnny Chugs.
I am at Alpha Shard.
And you will hear... Well, I mean, we're recording this before Turkey Day. And, oh, by the way, yeah, next week... I am going to be in Philadelphia for PAX Unplugged.
Nice.
Yep. So I'll have the podcast before then, and then I will come back to... Oh, yeah. You wanted me to check out a video game-based board game. Which one was it again?
Sniper Elite, the board game.
Right. I don't think it'll have the same thing in which you can watch an x-ray of people's bones being shattered by a bullet.
But... I have the feeling that if there's a card element, that's where they'll put it in.
Yeah, actually, you know, I saw a game that's a video game, a based game, which the full version of it, you know, with all the things is going to be $200. And I was looking, I said, damn, I really want to get this, but it's ending on the 26th, and it is just looks so good, but I'm not going to be able to get it because I can't afford it.
Oh yeah, which one is it?
Divinity of the Original Sin, the board game.
Oh, okay.
It's 1 to 4 players co-op. That's not the one I was thinking of, but they do have a Divinity Original Sin board game being released.
Mm-hmm.
That's going for a while, and it's going to be another month before. No, there's another one, and I'm trying to remember which one it was. And I was looking at it saying, oh, damn, it looks so good, and I want to play it, and I want to own it, but it's just going to be a lot more space.
They're also doing a Alien tabletop game, and I am... extremely, extremely excited to see what that is.
Look at my save projects. Let's see if I can find... Oh, yeah! So, no, this one is Vampire the Masquerade Blood Feud, a mega board game. It's going to have... It's 64 miniatures, and the collector's edition is going to have a 5-inch 3D bust. It looks so good. Just look it up on Kickstarter. Vampire the Masquerade Blood Feud. I want it so bad, but I can't afford. And I think it's actually going to be a I think it might actually minimum number of players 4, maximum number of players 32. So I think it's a hidden role game in which, you know, you have some people who are on the good side and some people who are on the bad side, and you have to figure out who's on your side and who's not on your side.
Mm-hmm.
Look, it makes me salivate. And damn it, I don't want to spend the money, but this game is sort of like whispering in my ear, go on, you know you want to do it. You know you want to buy it. You know you want to get the $200 SKU. And I'll only play it once.
I'm super excited for the Alien board game because my spouse, Sam, absolutely abhors xenomorphs. Like, they're the scariest thing in the world.
Did you ever see the Thing board game?
I have the Thing board game.
Oh, okay. Have you ever played Burke's Gambit?
I have not.
Okay, so that's an alien game that is not alien. It's a lawyer-friendly version of Alien, in which you have to figure out who is with the company and who is not, and who has the alien, who has the facehugger inside their chest. And if you're a good guy, you don't want to shoot. You want it to space the guy with the alien. You don't want to shoot him dead, because if you shoot him dead, the alien escapes and it randomly goes to another person, and no one knows who it is. And you're not allowed to check yourself. The only people who know if you have an alien in you are the other players.
Mm-hmm. I saw someone saying they played a one shot of the tabletop Alien RPG game. They said it played like Alien themed paranoia. They were talking about like there's an opportunity for one character, for one player among your bunch to be a secret android working for the company who might kill the rest of you and run away. And then there's of course the xenomorph itself, and it was like everyone was going to die is the tag. It was just a matter, it was just a question of how quickly and how badly.
Interesting. Yeah, so I'm going to be at the Facebook Unplugged. Facebook.
Awesome.
PAX Unplugged.
You have to bring us lots of video game opinions.
Yeah, actually, I'm going to be.
Or, I'm sorry, board game opinions.
Because I'm actually working with Slugfest Games. For those who know, they're the ones who do. Damn it, the drinking game, Red Dragon Inn, right. So I know Red Dragon Inn background. I'm going to be spending 4 hours each day, and I made sure it was at 10 a.m. So basically, the morning I'm going to be playing a lot of Red Dragon Inn, and after that, I can wander around and do whatever.
Nice.
And since I am an exhibitor, I can get to go in early. And you know how us press are. We're jealous of those people with the exhibitor badges are strolling right in way ahead of time because they have to set up everything. And they have special access to everything, too. I hate them. And I'm going to be one of them. So anyways, we will see you next week.
Happy gaming, everyone.
Have fun, eat turkey, play games, y'all.
And watch out for that L-tryptophan. Knock you on your sorry Thanksgiving ass. That's an MST3K joke. You know what I was going to do when I first did this episode? I was going to sing, "We gather together to watch cheesy movies on Comedy Central all Thanksgiving Day. It's Mystery Science Theater 3000. It's 30 straight hours and we call it Turkey Day."
Nice.